Welcome to the Clemson Dubcast. Friday morning, getting ready for Syracuse at Clemson, Death Valley, noon on Saturday. What a wild and crazy week. I have a column up at TigerIllustrated.com that where I try my best to sum up this whole situation, a tumultuous few days for Dabo Swinney, for Clemson football, for everybody. I'll say this, two maybe unintended positives of this, if this makes sense. Number one, had Kelly Bryant stuck around, the potential for controversy is a lot higher. This could have been an ongoing type of thing, especially if Kelly Bryant is not happy with the situation, visibly not happy with the situation in interviews and such. So that's something that sort of dawned on me not long ago. And then is the fact that he went out issuing a couple of parting shots, does that present a more galvanizing sort of theme for this team in that, and I'm not putting words in these players' mouths, not pretending like I'm inside their heads, and I'm also definitely not trying to say that 100-plus people can have a uniform thought on a controversial topic. That's never going to be the case. But are they maybe a little irritated at Kelly Bryant more given the way he went out than if, say, he had done the more conventional thing of press release, whatever. I'd like to thank Coach Sweeney for the opportunity. I want to move on so I can start elsewhere, blah, 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 blah. Maybe there's a little more sympathy for him at that point in the locker room. I don't know. Just throwing that stuff out there. You can read more about this situation, more about the matchup in this. Oh, by the way, there's a game on Saturday afternoon that has really been thrown to the side amid all this. Going to have the final thoughts about this game up later today, Friday, on TigerIllustrated.com, so feel free to check it out. We are almost at 20,000 downloads of the Dubcast, so really appreciate all y'all's support with that. Title sponsor of the Clemson Dubcast, Parham Smith and Archenhold Law Firm in Greenville. Very happy to have them aboard. Couldn't do it without them. Blake Smith and Brooke Archenhold, both Clemson grads, both huge fans. Forte of their firm is medical negligence. They represent patients and their family members in medical negligence actions. They also handle all sorts of other complex personal injury litigation. I can vouch for them. About 10 years ago, a family member had a pretty serious medical situation with one of the local hospitals. Went to Blake Smith, and he very quickly and authoritatively gave us some great advice, and we were very thankful for that. Parham Smith and Archenhold offers free consultations. Give them a call, 864-990-4581, or parhamlaw.com. If you're coming to the game tomorrow, you got to go check out the Abernathy Boutique Hotel. They are also one of our sponsors. They got a really cool thing going. A little tailgate party outside on the patio. DJ grilling hot dogs. Well, the DJ is not grilling the hot dogs. Somebody else is doing that. Also burgers and cornhole, things like that. Take a step inside, too. Check out Taps Cafe and Bar. Some good beers on tap. Really cool alternative to some of the other options in town during the week. For some of you folks, maybe you're working at the university, you want a more laid-back type of atmosphere. Really like what they do over there. A lot of nice folks. They'll take care of you. Heck, general manager Gary Cohen, if you find him, he'll even give you a tour and show you around. So go check him out before or after the game, or find him on the internet, theabernathy.com. All right, chances are you are aware of Clemson's social media presence. Their athletic department has just been an incredible story in terms of their devotion and their pioneering social media team. I mean, it used to be nothing. And now, over a period of maybe 4 or 5 years, they have become the envy of just about everyone else out there. And, you know, you see the vlog, you see a lot of the little short videos they're doing, very innovative things. So you're familiar with that presence that's been out there on social media and such, but you probably don't really know much about the people behind the scenes who are making it happen. And so we felt like it'd be cool to sit down with Jonathan Gant, who came aboard back in 2013 to preside over this transformation and this incredible rise that we've seen out of Clemson's social media presence. So had a really fun time talking to Jonathan, and hope you all enjoy. All right, we're here with Jonathan Gant. What in the heck is your title?
As of a couple months ago, it's Associate Athletic Director for Creative Solutions.
Okay.
Which is a new one. There aren't a lot of creative solutions departments across the country, but we've got one here at Clemson. So yeah, Associate AD of Creative Solutions.
I guess what
Does
I read...
Does that sound fancy?
Well, not as fancy as what I read, I guess, about a year ago. It was the Director of New and Creative Media for Clemson Athletics and Co-Director of the Center of Excellence for Next Generation Computing and Creativity.
That's right. My goal is to have the longest, most complicated business card in the history of man. So I guess I've taken a step back from that. I've shortened it a bit. But that role was really twofold. The first was athletics driven. And then I also, for the last, I guess, 2.5 years, have had a dual assignment with the university, where a lot of the best practices that we've been able to develop from a, you know, social media, digital marketing, content production and creation, digital media, all that stuff, what we've been able to develop over here have been able to share with other academic areas, staff areas across the university, which has been cool, because there's a lot that, you know, Dan Radakovich, Tim Match, all the people here helped create that has not just positively impacted athletics, but has able to positively influence other areas of the university too. So that's been really fun.
Native of Lexington?
Not a native of Lexington. I was born in St. Louis.
Okay.
Lived there for 10 years. And then my parents are from outside of Columbia. We moved back when I was about 10 years old to Lexington, South Carolina, because their parents were getting a little bit older. So we came back to the great state of South Carolina.
And you got here in 2013.
I did. That was pretty good timing, wasn't it?
A little bit. And you were with the Devil Rays previous to that.
Previous to that, Tampa Bay Rays, doing PR and communications, and prior to that, worked in minor league baseball.
Man, that's 5 years ago, and I remember when you got here, we were over in the, before a Dabo press conference, and man, things just seem so different. Look, thinking back, so primitive from a social media standpoint. Can you... It might take 3 hours, but can you encapsulate like all the things that have changed? Like, what was it like for you taking over, first of all, the social media?
Yeah, I'll do my best to try to keep it efficient and concise. But the way I've described it a lot is like a perfect storm. I mean, the idea of, even before I got here and before Joe Galbers got here, of Tim Match having a vision of a transformed communications department and doing more to tell our own story, not so much on the football side, because, you know, as you know, there are plenty of people covering Clemson football, and but we have an entire athletic department of teams, and how do we create publicity and excitement around the programs that maybe don't have people, you know, knocking down the doors to get in and cover the teams. And so that vision was there a long time ago, and then Dan Radakovich coming in, who has that kind of innovative spirit, is a doer, as everybody has witnessed here over his tenure. He's accomplished so much. And then at the same time, Coach Sweeney kind of hitting his stride at that point, and the football program moving into this upper echelon that they hadn't been in previously, that when I got here and when we started to build out the infrastructure of our department, like, the timing seriously couldn't have been better. And we had a lot of bounces that went our way that, like I said, if we did it probably 1,000 times over again, it wouldn't have worked out the way that it has. So a lot of factors, a lot of great people, the timing being what it was. I'm grateful that they set it up when they did, because when we made it to those back-to-back national championships, and certainly when we won, there was this infrastructure that was already in place to maximize those moments and to get the most that we could from a recruiting and a branding and a marketing perspective, that because we had built it, you know, a year and a half previous, that if we had been building it that year or tried to do it later, we wouldn't have gotten as much out of those major Clemson milestones as we did. So when I first got here, I'd never worked in college athletics before, had worked in sports, but it was amazing how much I didn't know before I got here. And those first 6 months were really transformative for me in understanding how recruiting is everything, you know, for an athletic department. And once I wrapped my head around that, and then you got, you know, people like Thad Turnipseed and eventually Jordan Sorrells and DJ Gordon inside the football program, that we just, there's just a lot of really good people here and a lot of people trying to do what's best for Clemson all the time. There's not very, I've worked at a lot of different places. There's not very much ego here and everybody wants to do what's best for Clemson. And when you get a special community like that, you can really do a lot of cool stuff. So there was a lot of great leadership from both sides, both from Coach Sweeney and what Thad was doing, as well as Dan and Tim and Joe Galbraith here on this side, that really made it easier to advance quickly because you had leadership who was like clearing the road for you.
Do you ever sit back and wonder, what if the football team was a 7-9 win team the last five years? How would your office be different? Would things have not gone over as well from your end? I'm just curious.
No chance it would have gone over as well. I mean, there's a lot of people. Don't get me wrong. I think we have a very special thing going here. I think there's a lot of special people, and we have a good operation. But there's a lot of people doing great work all across the country, and even more so now than there were when we first started, because so many have invested resources in this area. There's a lot of people doing great work that their teams are winning five games, or they're certainly not winning national championships. And so, yeah, it wouldn't have gone over the way that it did. What I'll say is that our staff and students, when the spotlight was on, were doing a tremendous job. And so, like I said, we were able to maximize that moment. So we were fortunate to have the spotlight that a lot of other peers across the country don't get to have. But when the spotlight was shining, I'm very, very proud of the work that all of our staff and students were doing, because I think it maximized the moment.
You mentioned DJ Gordon. I think I wrote a story on him.
You did. It's a good story.
3 years ago. Thank you. The roots of this are pretty remarkable, but yeah. It predates you.
Yes, yeah.
DJ, and you can take over for me after I start this, but he's, I don't know, 2012, maybe 2011. He's an assistant equipment manager, just messing around with his phone, maybe cameras. They're doing
phone.
Some phone.
Yep.
Doing Instagram or Vine videos. What?
He had a Clemson Equipment Twitter account.
That's right.
DJ is one of the best iPhone photographers that I've ever met. Like, he was doing so much just from his phone. He's such an interesting person, and your story does a great job of illustrating that. Of normally you get these people in these operations roles, or like you think of equipment manager and you don't think of this like creative virtuoso, like this guy who can make graphics and videos and take pictures. But like, he is that. He is truly unique in terms of the skill set and also the knowledge and the perspective that he has. So for us, he's been a tremendous asset because he is technically part of the program. Like, we are actually, you know, like part of the overall athletic department, and we service football, but we also service all the other programs. And so the hardest thing for us was that there was a while where we were kind of kept at arm's length because we weren't directly part of the football program. I mean, we really had to earn our way there and earn the trust, which is completely understandable. But DJ was the man on the inside. You know, he knew all the players because he was in the equipment room. He saw and had great relationships with the players every single day. And we get really amazing, sometimes candid stuff, you know, just of guys joking around in the equipment room or showing off a new piece of Nike equipment. Or he was also capable of like making really nice produced graphics and videos. So he's like an X factor. There's a lot of X factors, but he's one certainly that all the stuff that we've been able to accomplish, he's just a huge part of it because he had the relationships, he had the insight, And, you know, he was doing that. And I remember sitting down, me and Joe Galbraith sat down with him. This couldn't have been, but it was probably 6 months into my time here. And we sat down and we said, hey, we want to roll everything you're doing for Clemson equipment. That's what we want Clemson FB to be. That's what we want our programs, social media efforts to be. We want you to post there. And so I think he was a little hesitant at first, and understandably so, because I think he had like 10,000 followers on the equipment account, which is like, it's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And so, but he started posting to it, and then we got a few more people involved, hired Nick Conklin to do the video production. Jeff Callen is one of the most talented people that we have in this athletic department. He was, you know, like a women's basketball and volleyball and women's tennis SID, and we were able to shift him into a role where he did more graphic design and content creation and digital stuff. And so you just had this really great team of people. And then the students that we were able to add to that, Austin Kuhn, who's now at South Carolina, he was hired by them basically to build out the same similar department to what we've got here. Max Huggins, who in the last 12 months has worked the Super Bowl, the NBA All-Star Game, the MLB All-Star Game, the X Games. Like, he's basically done everything that someone 30 years his senior, that would be like a career for them, and he's done it like in the last 12 months. So, yeah, it's a lot of great people, and it's just crazy how it all came together. Like, Thad obviously was really – he came here with, you know – the story is well told of like, just make us, Coach Sweeney saying, you know, just make us better. And I think eventually the plan was for him to do what he did with the facility. But before we got to that point, you know, Coach Sweeney tasked him with revamping, overhauling our recruiting department. And to Thad's credit, you know, he understood how important social media was to recruits. Therefore it needed to be that important to our football program. And him coming in, he got here 6 months before I did. Him coming in at the same time that Dan Radakovich and Tim Match and Joe Galbraith were transforming our communications department. Like I said, it was just this like perfect storm of things happening at the same time, with leadership all aligned on how this needed to be a priority. And then the really talented people on the ground making it happen, all those people like Max and Nick and Austin and DJ and Jeff, who were doing just a really great job creating great social media content.
Some of these accolades might be dated, so please correct me or add to them. Ranked the number one Twitter account in college football by Sports Illustrated and Twitter, I guess, 2 years ago.
Yep.
2016, one of five finalists for Best in Sports Social Media at the Sports Business Awards. In 2015, you had 27 million on-demand video views. In 2015 also, you had 1.4 million new followers in 30 months. Is there anything more recent that I didn't catch?
Yeah, we're approaching 3 million total followers across the athletic department. About 2.5 of those are football accounts. And so like when we first started, that number was around 300,000. We were ranked number one in USA Today in terms of football social media accounts last season. Yeah, it's been the numbers. I mean, we're the second most followed college football program on Twitter. And all of your listeners will know Clemson is not that big. We don't have that many alumni. We don't have that many current students. It doesn't make sense that we would be the second most followed college football program on Twitter. But it's a credit to Coach Sweeney and what they do every single day over there, the success that the program has had. And then it's just been pretty staggering. A lot of it doesn't really make sense. But I think we've caught some pretty good waves. So, like I said, when the amazing success and the rise of the program was happening, like, we were positioned well to make the most of it. And so it led to this insane growth that doesn't really match up with how many actual Clemson fans there are in the world. But, you know, Clemson has been the cool program for the last couple of years. And, you know, Coach Sweeney is like a marketer's dream. You know, he's got all these slogans and he's just such a great inspirational speaker. And then the dancing obviously has been, every coach I think in the country started to try to copy him. All of a sudden you see like Roy Williams and some of these coaches like dancing in the locker room, just because they felt like they had to.
Nick Saban.
Yeah. Maybe one day. We'll see.
Well, Yeah, I wouldn't call that a dance.
That video, yeah. but even that, that's a fun story of the first locker room dance video that we ever did was the Notre Dame game, the infamous Notre Dame game in the hurricane. My basement actually flooded that day.
I remember that.
And if we had lost, that probably would have been like one of the worst weekends of my life. But we won, so it was kind of okay. It kind of worked out. But we had never been allowed to have a camera in the locker room prior to that game. That was like kind of off limits. And then that game happened, and it was such a milestone victory for the program. And you know, it's this hurricane, and everybody's just like on cloud nine after that game. And the locker room was like the best party that you've ever been to. Everybody was so happy and excited and elated. And the guy who would normally kick us out of the locker room if we tried to get in.
Who's that?
I'm not going to name names.
Okay.
But he wasn't there that day. He was just doing his job, by the way. He wasn't there that day because his wife was having a baby. And so we were like, well, there's a million people in that locker room all dancing. Let's just go in there and see if we get something. And I'll make sure that I run it by the appropriate channels if we get something that we want to share. And so we did. And Dabo hits the whip. And then, you know, I remember it was the wee hours in the morning. I showed that video to Thad. And I was like, you good with us putting this out? And there are a few times you can't normally predict when something's going to go viral. Like everybody always says, well, create a viral video. Well, it doesn't work that way. Like there's a really hard thing to do. But there's occasionally sometimes when you know, like, okay, this has a really good chance of getting a lot of attention. And that was one. And sure enough, overnight, the video had been viewed 4 million times. And it looked as though Clemson was the coolest, most fun locker room in the country, which I think that's true. And then there was like, well, we can't not do locker room dance videos now. You know, like recruits loved this, and because that video got sent to, you know, private DMs to all the recruits, and they loved it, as you could imagine. And then it was no going backwards. And so, like, that's why I say we got a lot of good bounces along the way. Of like, we wanted to make sure that we marginally got better and earned more trust. And then when we got lucky and had opportunities, that we took some big swings and, you know, took some big steps forward, and that was a big one. And then after that, it was like every single video, yeah, we got to have a camera in the locker room because we got to have one of those videos that we can, you know, send to recruits. And again, like we've seen Coach Sweeney, you know, dance in real time, and, you know, he looks like he's a pretty good dancer, but at the same time, he looks like, you know, a middle-aged white guy dancing. And, but then you set him to some rap music and you do some slow-mo and all of a sudden, like, it looks like he's hitting the whip on beat and is really cool. And so, yeah, it was, that was a fun one, certainly a night to remember. And that kind of kicked off the whole We Win, We Dance, Vine locker room, craze that has continued to this day.
In 2012, before the Chick-fil-A Bowl against LSU, Dan Radakovich and Tim Match sat down.
Yep.
Radakovich was fresh, I guess, in his first few weeks on the job. And they're talking about how do we revitalize our communications. I guess I'm putting that right.
Mm-hmm.
And they determined that they needed to refocus the sports information department.
Yeah.
To make it an advertising agency. The sports information department, very renowned for decades, but also very traditional. When you come aboard in 13, moving beyond that, how hard was that to shift the thinking from traditional, you know, sending newspapers,
right,
game stories and all that, to the thinking that you guys have of cutting-edge communication with donors and recruits?
Well, I came from, like we were saying before the podcast started, I came from a traditional PR background. Like, even the job that I had with the Rays was a traditional PR job. I spent 3 hours every single day writing game notes, literally every day. You know, that 162-game grind is significant. And so I would handle media requests in the clubhouse before and after the game, post-game notes. And then just because of, like, I was the way... I was a freshman in college. I just happened to be born at the right time. I was a freshman in college the year that Facebook came out.
Mm.
And so just because I was born when I was and it came out when it did, I feel like I can be a good go-between for the people who didn't grow up with any of this stuff and it's like a foreign language and it's and it can be intimidating versus the people who did grow up with it and they don't know anything other than having, you know, social media and iPhones in their life. I feel like I'm going to be a good go-between because just because of when I was born and when that happened. And the same goes for the shift with traditional PR to kind of the more new age communications, just because of when I came into, like, I got a journalism degree. I wanted to be a sports writer. That was my plan. And as I was going through college, you look out at the landscape and you're like, well, I'm not so sure how that's going to go. And so I just happened to get lucky and did a media relations internship for a minor league baseball team while I was still in college. I got to write as much as I wanted to about the topic that I was passionate about baseball. And I really loved it. And I was like, well, you know, I'm going to go on this path. It allows me to write, but then it also allows me to be around, you know, the sports that I want to be around. And so I did that. And like I said, at each of those jobs in minor league baseball, and then when I got to the Rays, they weren't doing any social media actually in the local office. Everything was done at MLB headquarters in New York. And so then our department, myself, just because it was a hobby of mine, started to do a lot of the social media stuff there in Tampa. But again, my job was traditional PR. And so I just feel like I was lucky to have gone through that experience that helped me in this experience. And then again, when you got the leadership that we do, it gives everybody here the best chance to succeed. And I think it's a testament to Clemson that everywhere is struggling with this. And yet Clemson was able to navigate it fairly successfully, at least seemingly successfully, that Tim Beray was, as you said, as respected as anybody in the country at that traditional aspect of doing things. And we were still able to come in and do these new age things and be successful at that at the exact same time. And Joe Galbraith really deserves a ton of credit for that, coming in and helping to transform the department and balancing that kind of could be awkward or could be tense situation, and it really wasn't. And it's a credit to Tim Beray that he was able to maintain a level of media relations operations that continued to be elite, you know, up until his retirement this past couple of years. And Ross Taylor now taking over for him. We've got all the expectations in the world that we're going to be great in that area moving forward. And it was a really important message to everybody. Like, you can do both. You can do both really well. It's not that you have to pick one or the other. You just have to have an infrastructure and people who get it, who work together. And it's very possible to do both of those things well. And I hope that we can continue to do both of those things well. But it wasn't easy. You know, there was a lot that there were many nights that Joe Galbraith and I where you're kind of like, this is right. This is clearly where we should be going. Why is it so difficult? You know, there's like 6 p.m. hour where you just go in and vent about different things. And there was a lot of that. But like me and him used to say, man, this place is going to be great in like 2 or 3 years if we can just keep at it. And sure enough, you know, this place is not perfect. Don't get me wrong. But I think I'm very, very proud of the staff that we have and the work that they're doing top to bottom, not just football, but across all of our different sports. We have tremendous staffers here with Brian Hennessy, what he does with the baseball program, in addition to being the secondary football contact, Libby Keene, Philip Sykes before he moved on, Ben Winterode, and then our GAs. We've had a tremendous amount of talent with our graduate assistants and undergraduate assistants over the years that it's just people ultimately that you either make it or you don't. And so we've had really good people and we've been able to work through what maybe some other places haven't because there's silos and stuff like that.
Business owners, you need to know about Tandem Payment, credit card processing company headquartered in Greenville, South Carolina. Office is located throughout the Southeast. One of the owners is a 2005 Clemson grad. He's forced the other owner to become a huge Clemson fan as well. Business owners out there listening, you know how painful it is to get the weekly phone calls from the national processing companies promising, quote, the lowest rates in the industry. Tandem approaches this business completely different. They handle all their business face-to-face. Why would you trust the majority of your hard-earned money to somebody over the phone? Tandem utilizes a consultative approach where they look out for the best interest of their potential clients. First company across the country to receive the BBB Award for Integrity. Tandem also employs Clemson graduates as well as former Clemson football player Hot Rod McDowell. The newest program Tandem offers is called Cash Discount. You can eliminate up to 100% of your annual credit card processing fees. The best part, it encourages more cash transactions inside your business. Plus, you save the typical processing fees you pay annually. Call Tandem 864-672-1570 or TandemPayment.com. So the basic idea, I guess, in layman's terms of this transition to an ad agency is where before the job of the sports information department was servicing newspapers, radio, TV, all that, you're saying we can do all that, a lot of that ourselves. We can tell our own story thanks to the internet, the wonders of the internet and social media. So you're taking control of that and I guess taking advantage of your access to tell those stories. Is that the right way to?
Yeah, there was a kind of narrative about it back in like 2012, 13, 14, where the kind of headline was, well, we're going to be our own media, which that's not correct. Because for instance, I'm not going to report on anything. You know, like we are never going to be a better reporter than you are, Larry. Like that's not something that we're set up to do. And it's not something that we really want to do. It's just would cause all sorts of conflicts. And so it was never about being our own media. It was about for the sports that aren't getting the spotlight. Why would we have the sports information director for those sports do the same thing that Tim Bure was doing for football, where there was dozens of people who he needed to service and provide information to and help coordinate interviews? You know, like all that stuff was important because there was a lot of people who needed it. And what's not the case for like basically all of our sports, other than, you know, football, men's basketball, a little bit of coverage for women's basketball and baseball get some coverage. But other than that, like why are we writing these long media guides? Why are we writing game notes when no one's asking for them and no one's using them? So let's make sure that the staff that we have is focused on areas that can bring value to their programs. And honestly, the answer to that is recruiting. It's either recruiting or revenue. And we try to do as both as much as we can. But, you know, let's get those people who are focused on game notes, let's have them working on graphics and different video content that our coaches can utilize in their recruiting. Because, like we say all the time, a coach can only talk to a recruit so often, both by NCAA standards, but also just there's only so much time in the day. But we can supplement. We can talk to a recruit 24/7 through social media because we know that's where they're talking to their friends. That's where they're getting entertainment. If that's where they are, that's where we need to be. So we're trying to echo exactly what a coach would say to a recruit on, you know, on the couch in the house when they go for a visit. We're trying to say all that through content all the time on social media. So that's the kind of transition that we went to from a lot of just being the middleman and trying to service others, that in the areas where there were no others to service, let's just start to do that ourselves. And the reason that was made possible was because of the internet, like you said. And now everybody's got, you know, you can shoot in 4K on your phone and you can edit an entire video from the phone in your pocket. You know, the tools of production, the cost became accessible to everyone. And now we had the distribution platforms to get directly to our target audiences of recruits and fans and donors and potential fans and current student athletes. So that opportunity was there. And that's really where Tim Match deserves the credit for having that vision of that opportunity was there. And we hadn't taken, we hadn't done anything about it. And so it was, let's get up to speed here in 2013 and with all the technology that's available, with all the distribution, with social and web, let's start utilizing that. And just a lot of great people have been doing the work over the years to get us there.
Your job is about ideas, creating something new, mm-hmm. never staying still,
yes,
innovating, always thinking about the next thing. How hard is that when you're at the top? I mean, you're the standard that a lot of just about every other communications department, you know, looks up to. How is it more difficult when you're at the top?
I always have to be careful how I, because I could talk for hours about this stuff, just as I'm really passionate about the the industry. But at the same time, like the casual fan, the answer that I would give to that is not the answer that I would give to somebody who like does this on a daily basis, because it can sound really pretentious. the aesthetics of our content and our distribution strategy and this and that is like the average fan's like, who cares? Like, what are you talking about? If the team wins, people are going to retweet it, which I would understand. So like, I could give a very long-winded, potentially pretentious sounding answer, but I'll try to keep it simple in that we were fortunate that our leadership gave Clemson the opportunity to get ahead on this. And we feel a responsibility to make sure that we stay ahead. However, the margins are smaller now than they were. We were able, because of the leadership here, we were able to kind of disrupt an industry. We weren't the first to do it, but we were among the first, and we were certainly among the first to really commit legitimate resources and strategy to it, make it a priority. And so then we were able to put a huge gap between us and a place like South Carolina or even Ohio State, all these places that have hired Clemson people to start their own departments where they are. Now, as those places have spent resources and put infrastructure in place in the same way, there's not as much of a gap that we can create. We can't take these giant leaps ahead of them anymore, but we still can make sure that we're as competitive as possible in this field. And all of a sudden, that extra, the whole 80-20 rule, that extra 20% becomes really, really important, because that's the only way that you differentiate yourself between an Ohio State or whoever else. So I still think that to your original question, ideas matter the most. Whoever's got the best idea wins. And so I feel like it's my responsibility to get as many people in the room as possible who can come up with the best ideas and clear the decks for them to execute. That's kind of what I feel like my role is. And we've got a lot of really talented people here, and it's just a matter of creating the structure and the environment where they can create.
You have a notebook on your nightstand. Do you wake up and jot down ideas? When do you come up with what's your opportune time of the day for
idea generation?
Like, is there? Yeah.
The morning, first thing in the morning. And I wouldn't be the director of New and Creative Media if I was doing it on a notebook. I have to do it on my phone. And honestly, I don't even want to pretend like I'm the one coming up with all the ideas. I've had a handful over the years, but the student involvement is where I think we really get the most bang for our buck there, because you think about our target audience of recruits who are teenagers, and then you think about these undergraduate student assistants that we have. And they're 18 to 22 years old, and they're a lot closer in age to those teenage recruits. And they, therefore, are a lot more in tune with what they like and what's cool and what's not. And so that's the fun thing, is being able to create, kind of the bumper lanes for students and then letting them go. That's what we talk about. That's kind of the metaphor we use. Like, we feel a responsibility to pave the road. And then however these different creatives in our department drive it is up to them, however fast or left or right, like that's up to them. But we got to make sure that they have a road to go down and a vision and a path to follow. And a lot of the ideas can come from anybody, and they should come from everywhere. And then as long as they're, appropriate for the Clemson brand, then I want to make sure that we're encouraging as many people to follow through on those ideas as we can. So for me, I try as much as I can to contribute, but there's less coming from me than there is from all the talented folks that we have around here.
One of the most enduring videos you guys have produced is the one from Dabo's 2008 introductory press conference when Eric Boynton, poor guy, Spartanburg Herald Journal, he asked a legitimate question.
He did. It was a good question.
Totally legit question.
Be remembered for as long as we can continue sharing that video.
What was the question?
He said, "Do you feel like Clemson's taking a chance on you? You don't have any head coaching experience." As you said, very legitimate question.
And then, so there's that question, then like a montage of of images of Dabo building the program. 15-second video?
15-second video.
At the end, Dabo says, No.
Yeah.
And so I saw a video of you saying, I'm convinced that a 90-minute documentary wouldn't have gotten the point across better than that video did.
Yep.
Elaborate.
That's one of my favorite examples to show people. Whenever I go and speak, like at a conference or something, I usually start with that. One is because it's funny, it's quick and impactful. The two is because, like, Coach Sweeney's just a better public speaker than I am, so I try to get him to get the crowd repped up, basically. That project started out as a undergraduate student, not in our department, being tasked with creating a feature-length documentary about Dabo Sweeney. Now, this was before we had ascended into that elite status. I think this was in 2014, maybe Russell Athletic Bowl year, I think.
Yeah, 14.
But Coach Sweeney was still special even back then, even though we hadn't, you know, had the success, at least to the extent that we have now. And so I was like, oh, how can we brand Dabo? How can we get him more out there? How can we get him more respect and notoriety, you know, in the college football world and certainly among recruits? And so I was like, well, let's make a documentary about him, which, again, we don't, even to this day, we don't have the ability to make a feature length document. We don't have that kind of manpower or that kind of infrastructure to support something like that. We're really great at making 6-second videos, you know? But like a feature length documentary, we can do it. Well, the poor kid, I say poor kid, but goodness, he's talented and did amazing work here and continues to do so. Kevin Collins, he in earnest set out to make a feature length documentary about Dabo Sweeney. And he did interviews with, Dabo's mom and with Tracy and Kathleen and bunch of former coaches, like childhood friends. Like he really did. It was an impressive effort, but at the same time, there was no way it was ever going to work out. Well, he did all these interviews and literally this project lasted 9 months. And the only thing he got out of it after those 9 months of all those interviews of like traveling and all this stuff, the only thing he got out of it was that 15-second video.
Wow.
But as I've said, as you just mentioned, I am 100% convinced that 15-second video gets the point across about how Coach Sweeney was special, how he had a belief in himself, and how that belief he was able to share with other people and turn into incredible success for the Clemson football program. That 15-second video gets the point across way, way better than any 90-minute documentary could. And when you think about recruits, how many recruits are we going to get to sit down to watch a feature-length movie versus how many can we get to watch a 15-second video in their Twitter feed? Got a lot better chance at that. And so, Kevin, I love that video so much. And we've updated it over the years and then did a longer version when Coach had his 100th win last year. But yeah, I mean, that's a great example of really early on, everybody always used to say things like, well, just make a quick 5-minute video. When's the last time you watched a 5-minute video?
Well, I'm old, so pretty recently probably.
Yeah? On the internet? On Twitter?
Oh, no, not on, no. No, you're right.
Yeah. I mean, when you watch TV, you'll watch something, certainly. But like on your phone, who's watching anything that's 5 minutes? And so we really tried to package content around how you use your phone. And think about how you use Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, any of that. It's just this constant scroll with your thumb. And our goal is, how can we stop the scroll? How can we get something that makes you stop and look at what we're doing, makes the point, gets your attention, delivers value with that attention, and then moves on, doesn't keep you for longer than we need to. And so there was a lot of 15-second videos early on. And now we've zagged completely to like 24-minute vlogs. But that was the goal early on. And how we were really doing things different than a lot of other places was short-form social video. That's kind of what we hung our hat on the first 3 years, that we were doing different than most other people. That was a better strategy for how people use social media, is like those short, quick-hitting videos.
Well, why the veer? Yep. To the longer video, who's sitting down watching 20-minute vlogs? What's the science behind that? How do you figure that out?
There's an example of the question that you asked earlier of how do you differentiate yourself? Now that these other schools have invested a lot of resources, you know, Ohio State wants to be like Clemson and they try to hire everybody, I think, that we had in our department at the time, and did eventually hire one of our guys, Andre Robinson. you know, they invest resources. Texas, you know, $250,000 with all these people just for the football program. Not like we service all sports. These are people just for the football program that outnumber our personnel for 19 sports. But, you know, how do you combat that? How do you stay ahead of that? And the fact of the matter is if Ohio State has six guys just for their football program creating digital content, we are not going to be able to keep up with the frequency of that. They just have more hands to do it on a daily basis. But the best idea still wins. And how can we do something that's special to Clemson, unique to Clemson, and that's something that they haven't thought of yet, hopefully, and create kind of a new niche for ourselves that we don't have to compete on a frequency basis, on a quantity basis, which we know we're probably going to lose at that. How can we do something that sets us apart? And so Nick Conklin had perfected, you know, 6 and 15 second videos, Austin Kuhn, Max Huggins, and the students that we had. And we did that for about, you know, 2 or 3 years. And it was like, well, we can't just keep doing this. What can we do that's different? And looking at, again, always focusing on recruits, how big the YouTube ecosystem is for that teenage audience of teenagers are on YouTube for an insane amount of time every single day. And so, okay, well, how do we tap into that? What could we do that would be successful on YouTube? And I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. At the time, my 1-year-old was not sleeping through the night. She was waking up at about 4 or 5 a.m. every day. So I was waking up at about 4 or 5 a.m. every day, you know, trying to be a good husband or whatever, waking up with a baby. But that's a lot of hours to kill in the morning. And yeah. So pretty quickly I kind of ran through, you know, the Netflix stuff. Because I'd always have something on in the background while I'm playing with blocks or, you know, reading books or something like that. And so then I start just out of curiosity researching more into YouTube and trying to understand that better. And then you start to find some of these YouTube stars, these big YouTubers who have millions and millions of followers, who are getting more video views and have more advertising power than some of these network television shows. And come across a guy named Casey Neistat, who's been a massive influence on really our entire department. And there's a student named Andy Turner, who also is a Casey Neistat fan, who works with us. He had created a behind-the-scenes vlog at the national championship game the year that we won it. Had been filming all week and had this great, you know, I think it was like 11 minutes, you know, behind the scenes vlog of our social media operation. And like Andy doing that was like, hey, we could do this. And we had always talked about how do you show the village of a Clemson football, of all the resources that a Clemson football student athlete has. And we wanted to attack that for the longest time, but like, then you're talking about 2-minute, like stuffy sit down interviews with a trainer and a strength coach. Not interesting, not engaging. Well, this vlog format was a way to make all those areas that, if we did it in a traditional way, it could probably end up boring. It was a way to make those things really, really engaging and interesting just because the format was different. It was a lot more interactive. It was a lot more candid, a lot more raw, and or at least we try to make it look that way. And, you know, Andy doing that vlog of the national championship and then all of us, you know, becoming fans of Casey Neistat, was like, well, all right, well, how can we take that format that he's developed and use that to show what it's like to be a Clemson Tiger. And again, credit to Andy Turner, Max Huggins, and now Madison Williams, Nick Conklin, and all the people that we have involved in that they're legitimately producing a weekly television show that I'm amazed at the quality of it, their ability to turn things around as quick as they do, but not sacrifice quality. You know, it's a bear of a project. But we have heard so many great reviews from recruits and their families that, I mean, think about it. If you were a 17-year-old and you're trying to pick out where to go to school and you get to see that in-depth of a look of what it's like to actually live and breathe in that program every day, and it's produced in a way that's formatted for someone like you as a teenager, you know, like it's quick cuts and it's exciting, that helps them understand what life is like, what life would be like if they came here. And it helps their parents understand what life would be like. And their parents get to see that we have chefs like, you know, Donna in the Paw Bistro, and we have, strength coaches who really know what they're doing and what they're talking about. We've got academic advisors who are doing all this pod journey, and what Jeff Davis and his group brings to the table in terms of these amazing resources, not just to help them as football players, but to help them become the best people, the best leaders that they can be. Why wouldn't you want your son to go play for that program, in addition to all the success that they're having, making it to national championships? And so, again, another credit to Coach Sweeney and to the entire program over there, that Clemson is just different. Like, you can, we don't have to manufacture anything here. We don't have to put a PR spin on everything. Like, people are actually that genuine that what you see on those vlogs is what it's like to be inside the Reeves football operations facility. So it's a great credit to Andy and Madison and Alex Mueller and Nick Conklin and all the folks who are involved, Mark Machewski and Jeff Cowan. But it's also a great testament to the actual people who are in that program, the student athletes, the coaches, the staff, that what you're seeing there is a legitimate view of what life is like as part of the Clemson football program.
I have about 50 more questions I'd love to ask you, but you have two daughters that need to be picked up.
I do.
That takes precedence right now.
To be continued.
Yeah, let's do it again.
Let's check the listenership. You might not actually want to do another episode of this.
Oh, see how many complaints. No.
Retention on this one.
People are going to love it. Jonathan Gant, well done. Congratulations on all your achievements, and look forward to seeing all the newest ideas you have in store.
Thank you very much for having me. Shout out to Joe Galbraith on his hour and 15-minute drive from Duncan. I know he's going to listen to this, if no one else. So
we have at least one listener.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jonathan. Okay, that was fun, interesting, and enlightening. Hope you all enjoyed that. Thank you to Jonathan Gant for sharing his time with us. Thank you to our title sponsor, Parham, Smith, and Arts and Hold Law Firm in downtown Greenville. Also to the Abernathy Boutique Hotel in Clemson, right across from Lower Lot 2. And Tandem Payment in Greenville. Thanks to the City Champs for providing some really cool bumper music. Most of all, thanks to all of you for making this a part of your twice weekly routine. Cheers, everybody. Have a safe weekend.